The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the Internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
Glad you're here. My name is Davies Owens. I am with the Ambrose School in Boise, Idaho. I am kind of wear two hats out there as dean or principal of the 7 through 12. I'm also the head of vision and advancement, so marketing, communications, development work out at Ambrose. But prior to that, this will be the start of my third year there. Prior to that, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, head of school for Heritage Preparatory School, where I've been for about 10 years in the heart of the city, a very competitive market, about 70 private schools right inside the perimeter highway. So a lot of opportunity to kind of differentiate and make sure that parents are sticky. So we're here today to kind of talk about this topic. It's interesting in preparing for it. I thought there's a lot of material out there that talks about recruiting of parents into the school, but not a whole lot about how do we really keep them from becoming disillusioned and leaving out the back door. So that's really what we're going to be talking about. The more I've been in the school business, I've realized that this is probably one of the most difficult products for us to market. If you think about it, we have a relationship with our customer that extends at least 13 years or maybe two decades, depending on the number of students that they have. We're also it's a very odd business model because we don't directly deal with our customer. We have this little person in between that's a child or a hormonal adolescent that is sort of mitigating everything back to the customer on our behalf. And it's a very difficult kind of business model if you think about it. We're dealing with people's time, with their money, and with their children. It's like the holy trinity of what not to go into a business. Very difficult. One of my good friends, Gordon Pennington, who's a head marketer in New York of a marketing firm, has represented Apple Computers and many other products, has said classical Christian education is by far the most difficult product to get out to the customer because it is inherently confusing from the get-go. Classical, who knows what that means. Christian, that's loaded, and education, school, everybody thinks they already know. And so we are dealing with obviously a very difficult product that we're trying to get to a customer base that's very fickle and moving. So my goal for the next 45 minutes is just to spend the first probably half basically presenting you with questions and thoughts that hopefully we're all considering by way of creating a sticky environment. And then the back half is going to be very focused on nuts and bolts, kind of practical applications. What are the questions we should be asking, and how do we make this work? Because ultimately, we have customers that we have to continually resell. When I think about sticky, I think about this model. At the end of the day, stickiness means that the value, and that's not just real value, that's perceived value. It's what they're at any moment believing about what they're getting for their money. That is exceeding what they consider to be the cost. And the cost is everything from how much money the tuition is to the amount of time it's taking because your carpool line is so crazy long I can't even seem to get through there, or just the general happiness. My child is stressed out again about homework. And all these costs, if we're not careful, can exceed the value. And once that tipping point happens, it's only a matter of time before something changes in their head and they are no longer advocates for you. Because ultimately, all the things that draw them in, we love the uniforms, you're convenient, you're character building, you're Christian school, we love this. But the minute that tipping point shifts back up and the value's not there, they may not be long for the school. So how do we address that? And I think this idea of where are we on the balance is really, really critical. When I think about sticky parents, who they are and why we want them for a number of reasons. Number one is alignment issues. If you look at the real cost of organizational turnover, again, if you know these statistics, I'd love to find them out there. There's plenty of statistics that say in corporations, employee turnover, on average, it's going to cost you four times plus what the annual salaries of that employee to replace them if you have to replace them. I don't know. I can only imagine similar in schools. Every time we have to replace a parent or their child, the cost not only in lost tuition revenue, but in terms of cultural damage or challenges or just the hours. How many hours I know I've spent this year working with those families that are having issues because they're out of alignment. They're not sticky. They don't understand it. The second thing is if you can get them sticky, not only are they aligned, but they're advocates for you. 74%, I read recently, make decisions for your school based on word of mouth. What other people are saying. Let's face it. When you go to Amazon recently, what did you look at? The reviews. Is this a good product? Let me see. Oh, I'm not going to buy that. Some people, too many twos and threes, not fives. So we tend to make decisions based on the word of mouth. So advocacy, if you've got sticky parents, they're your advocate and they're helping to build your school because after all, we are sheeple, we sheep, we follow around what other people think, kind of with a herd mentality. And then thirdly, sticky parents have endurance. And endurance means that when the opposing forces come, be it too much homework, be it fatigue, crying child, whatever it may be, they're going to say, you know what? There's something bigger here than what I'm living in this moment. I'm going to endure. The Hoover Institute did a study that indicated in the last 10 years that private school as an industry is down 13%. As charter schools and public schools continue to become viable options for many, it depends on what region you're in. If you're in Atlanta, where I was from, no one would consider a public school, even a pagan out there would, no way. If you're in a small town, maybe the public school is a real option for you. But the point is that ability to endure is going to be much more likely if the parent's truly sticky when those competing opportunities come along. So Flannery O'Connor in 1963 at the 175th anniversary of Georgetown University gave her last public address, and she said this: the things that we see and hear and smell and touch affect us long before we believe anything at all. I think it's a great quote. The things that we see and hear and smell and touch affect us long before we believe anything at all. We may be espousing all kinds of lofty classical views, but are we living out, is the ethos of our culture and community something that's so compelling that our parents want to be there, that our students want to be there? So I think the first thing I want us to look at is this question: what is it that schools need to know about parents? What do we need to know about our parents? And I would say, first of all, this again may seem obvious on the one hand, so make sure we're all thinking about it, is the reality of demographics. If you've been in a school for more than about 5 years, you are now dealing with the inbound families that are coming in are inherently at a different generational place than those who were there 5 or 10 years before. If you've done any research on kind of the changes, obviously the boomers, the Gen Xers, the millennials, and they've got this new group coming that they're calling Gen Z or the iGen born after 2000, they grew up on the technology, they're coming differently. When I was in Atlanta, I was a part of the Atlanta Area Association of Independent Schools, and there was a gentleman that was the head of that organization who had been in private school, Christian school, for 20 years. I'll never forget, he came to me and he said, I am done. Next year, I am retiring. I love the school business, but the parents today are dramatically different than the parents that were there 20 years ago. These millennial parents that come in, they're entitled, all the stuff, we know it. They're a different customer base than what we have had in the past. And I think while we get caught up in the timelessness of classical education, we can't be timeless about the reality of the customer base that's right in front of us. A good friend of mine is the vice president of Chick-fil-A, and he's telling to me that in the last few years, they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on their training of their staff. With simple things like making their hand-spun milkshakes, which we all love, because what they're finding is that these millennials that are coming in and being employed at Chick-fil-A are not convinced that the peach hand-spun milkshake is being made the best way. And so they feel like it needs a little more fresh peach in there, or maybe a little more vanilla. And so they're having to go in and say, look, you haven't grown up in an authority structure. You're used to doing it your own way. That's not how it's going to be in this organization. But they've had to spend hundreds of thousands to retool that staff. So how much more so are we needing to think about, if we want sticky parents, these are not the same parents that were there 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And it's scary to think what's coming around the corner. How do we know that? Well, it may be through annual surveys. A lot of schools do annual surveys. I recommend that. And I would say if you've never done one before, you can go through a Survey Monkey out there and that may be fine. You may want to employ a firm or an organization that can actually structure a pretty robust survey to kind of look at all aspects of the school. There are different ways to do that. I know I'm talking with Keith Nix at Veritas. Keith, on the other hand, there's the big school-wide. Keith just does like grade level. Like he'll just do a survey of parents in fifth grade or kindergarten and then kind of set up meetings with those particular parents and kind of figure out what's going on in their world. The pressure points are changing. And so just, again, for limited time, I would just say pay attention to that. Second would be in Titus's cultural trends. It depends on where you are in your culture. Where I am in Boise, Idaho is inherently different than Atlanta, Georgia. And one needs to know where is my parent base in terms of their understandings and their ideas. Tied to cultural trends would be just the increase in consumerism. I read that by 10 years of age, children today have 300 to 400 preferred brands. So now we now have children that are brand savvy to the point where they're making the buying decisions. You see that more and more where the kids come in and they're already deciding, little Susie, where do you want to go to school? I don't like the school. They don't have whatever the other school has. There are these little mini consumers that are coming in. And so how do we help address that? We've got parents that choose schools on the basis of what school was to them. And maybe it's this sort of ethereal, kind of Disney-ish idea of the American perfect school with small classes and location and safety. And so how do we continue to re-message to these parents? And I think ultimately, as I'll kind of draw this into practical application, is what is the role of community in your school? And whether we like it or not, the church is quickly being replaced in many environments by the school. And I know that's something we battle quite often. We have, occasionally parents will come in and say, we love our church, we're only there once a week. We're with you guys 5 days a week, and you know our lives better. And would, you know, could we kind of invest even more in this community? And I said, yes, but don't replace your church. And so, but yet there's a desire for community and connectivity, and I don't think we can ignore that. So the point in all this is we got changing demographics and culture. If you're still using the same open house talk you were using 10 years ago, you might want to take a look at it and see what's going on there. The other thing about what schools need to know about parents is really the stages of parents' growth. Where are your parents? At what point? If you're in a new school that's starting out and, you know, most all the parents are
parents of third graders and below, and they're all excited and they're in their first few years, they're kind of in this newly, what I call the newlywed phase of school life. 3 years and younger, they're still newlyweds. I did premarital counseling for years. Newlyweds are amazing because they will do anything you ask before they get married. So you want like 15 premarital counseling sessions, they will gladly come. So you can say, hey, new parents, sorry, welcome to our school. We have required 6 parent, you know, orientation meetings before, you know, first grade kindergarten starts. You'd be surprised. They will probably take you up on that. I know the Providence School in Dallas, head of school, has a breakfast on Saturday mornings for new families and just heavy indoctrination. Here's what we're about. Here's kind of, let's get you sticky right from the beginning. But by the time they move kind of 3 years and after, it's kind of this roommate phase where they're living more out of the backpack of their kids. They are more concerned now about peer issues versus just safety and nice uniforms and the kind of the cute factor. And so how do you speak into that particular season? So again, ask yourself, if I want sticky parents, and most of my parents, I've been here 3 years or longer, they're at a completely different place in their mindset. And what are they concerned about? I know schools, again, all of a sudden you've got parents that made a decision for kindergartner, and now they've got a parent, or now their child's about to go into middle school. And they don't know if this is the right school for them anymore. They've never asked those questions. These are a totally different set of questions. So I know schools that will have, you know, simple things. Invite parents of rising middle schoolers to a lunch, serve up some pizza and salad, bring in middle school teachers. We did that in Atlanta. And it was a great way just to kind of help them see, oh, this is the new vision. This is where the school's going in that kind of middle stage. And there's what I call the retired stage. These are often by the time parents make it all the way up to high school, and you're having the parent orientation, everyone come, they're like, we've been here for 10 years, we already know everything there is to know. I don't need to come to your thing anymore. How do you re-message those annual events so that those more retired-minded parents are realizing there's something for them in those gatherings? And also, I would just kind of footnote and say, it also depends on what stage your school is in. If your school is less than 10 years old, you're still in that first-generation true believers where almost every family in there has been there bootstrapping and pulling it together, making it happen. After about 10 years, when you get the nice building and things start falling into place, it's a completely different environment again. So I'm really just trying to stir up where these questions to what do you know about the parents and where they are demographically in terms of the stages that they may be in. And then this is just a quick note on this. I, a few years ago, became familiar with other tools like this. It's kind of like a love languages. Parents are different. We're humans. We're wired differently. This is the Herman Brain Dominance Instrument, the HBDI, and I only mention it to make the simple point that every time you speak to your parents, you're going to be speaking naturally out of probably one of these four quadrants. So what, real quickly, kind of this is designed to be a evaluation that of 120 questions, and it shows kind of natural thinking preferences of people. My point in bringing it up is to just say, as you message, make sure you're not just messaging in one of these channels. So if you have people that are blue, they're more facts-oriented, they're logical, facts-based, they want to know how many graduates did you have last year, how are the test scores going, the financial viability of the school. A lot of men kind of fall into that category, maybe. Yellow is more future, they're more innovative, they're risk-takers, they're conceptual, they want to know what the vision of the school is going to be. The green is going to be more formed, planned, detailed, they want to hear about the curriculum, the logistics. And the red is going to be more the feelings, the emotional, the story-based, they're inspired by the stories. And so as you think about every time you communicate to the parents, are you naturally, because you're a blue, fact-driven, logical person, you've got a feeling person over here who just wants to hear the stories, and you've never really told the stories, you've just kind of slammed them with all the facts. How well are you doing kind of speaking to all of these thinking audiences that are out there? I think that's important regardless of where parents are in their stage of understanding. And my favorite one, what school do you know about parents in Loco Princes when the princesses are loco? You know, it's been said that running a school is the art of relationship management. A friend of mine at Chick-fil-A says that even in corporate America, they have a term they call them cave people. Cave people are citizens against virtually everything. It's about 5% of the population. I think it probably bears out true in the school world as well. It's just, you know what, people are people, and we get the life that people live with all of its bumps and bruises, and they're struggling in their marriage, or they're depressed, or they're having life issues, and they come dragging in the school, and they're just not going to be happy. And you got to know that that's always going to be the case. And sort of how do you help manage in advance those people? I would say the number one thing you can do here is to fence the front door of your school. And I know that every school is going to be slightly different. In some schools, some of you are more in a more evangelistic or missional oriented school, and you're bolted onto a church maybe, and the idea is, hey, we got Christian teachers, we're classical Christian, but we want anybody in the community to come to our school. That's inherently different than being a covenant-based school where you're really focused on discipleship. If you're more the latter, you have probably more ability to be aggressive in fencing the front door. And it's something we can all do better. I know at Ambrose, don't tell the parents we do this, but we rank them on a 15, 1 to 15 based on about 5 different criteria, from the interview we do with them to their understanding of classical education to their faith story. We want to make sure that these parents are coming in from the very beginning really get this. Now, people will study your website and come in and say all these amazing things. You never really know. But at least make an effort to fence the door as much as you can. I had a board member in Atlanta early on when I was head of school came up, and he said, I don't care if you only let 3 families in next year. Make sure they're the right families. And I was like, what about the budget? And he said, I don't care. Make sure they're the right 3 families. And I don't know that I would literally always think that way, but the point was well taken, because for every family you let in, it isn't a good fit and it becomes one of those cave people. How many hours does it cost you? Back to alignment issues and all the rest. I would say there's some, you know, how many of our neighborhood associations, maybe clubs we're a part of, that go to far more effort than we do to make sure the people that are coming are not right in the sense of alignment, but also right in the sense that they are really committed to the vision as much as they understand it. And what are we doing on the front end to make sure they understand it? I think, again, back, it's not only, yes, it's a lot of it's the admissions process. I know there's schools that really sit down with each family, look at here's our core values. Do you line up to this? I think the school, the Ambleside schools actually have like a 3-page commitment letter where it's like, here's what we're committing to do. Here's what we want you to commit to do. Are you going to be okay with this? Now sign on the dotted line. So all of those efforts, and they come in many forms, go a long way in driving, I think, into a sticky sense from the beginning in the decision of the parents. So what else do parents need to know about the school? I would say, to Doug Wilson's point this morning about your vision, this is something that I think all of us struggle with, is the transition from what the board understands the vision of the school to be, to what the administration understands it to be, to what the teachers understand it to be, to the parents, to the students, like that entire transfer process going down. Do we really all understand and agree what it is that we are doing? Is there a unity of understanding? Not just a static vision statement, but do they really see the value in what's going on? I was talking to one of our dads who has now graduated. He has 4 kids. 3 have graduated Ambrose. One is now going to her junior year. I said, what made you sticky? And he said, I definitely can tell you of all of the moments where we ask ourselves, is this the right school? The homework pressures are so great, the social life or whatever it may have been. And they were one of the earlier families. He said, honestly, for me, it was the fact that I was thinking 10 years out, because I had heard so often, where is this going in the vision 10 years from now? And take the school down the street that maybe claims to have better, you know, more AP classes or whatever it may be, 10, 20 years from now, graduate A from our school, graduate B from the other school, what does it look like? Well, he's a stockbroker and ours is a whatever, you know, in whatever line of work. But the point is that where's that playing out? Well, now they love Christ. They are people of character and integrity. And this dad just kept saying, I don't care how rigorous the homework is right now. I know where this is going. And that ability to keep that 10-year vision out there is what made him very sticky through the trials and the difficulties of the moment, especially as the child was with tears in their eyes. It's kind of an interesting comment. I just got off the plane from Rwanda. Looking glassy-eyed, I'm a little jet-lagged right now, but I was flying on Qatar Airlines. I was over there working with one of our schools that we're partnering to support through our school and sponsor in Rwanda. And as I was on Qatar Airlines, which is an airline based in near Saudi Arabia, both going over and coming back, they made me sit there and all the little screens cleared, and I had to watch a 3-minute video in which they have partnered with Educate a Child Initiative with a goal saying that there's 61 million children on the planet and they plan to reach 10 million by the year 2015, especially in primary education, because they see the importance of about cultural formation and change. And they're showing images of what are clearly kind of Islamic schools. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, here's an airline that is doing a better job than maybe we do in our schools of casting a vision, not just sort of in the immediacy of learning so you get off to a better college, but that what we're doing is forming culture and human souls. And I thought, how ironic that this Saudi airline is actually doing a better job on their flights of indoctrinating people with a goal of 61 million children. So I just want to, it's just kind of as a kick in the pants for me to go, we are doing something way bigger. And do our parents get this? Do they understand that we are forming the paideia, the souls of our children, at a level way beyond just the homework and the academics? So to that point, what parents need to know about our school is moving way beyond the trivium itself. What are the stories that really move us? We had a friend who was out at Ambrose recently that's and also involved in marketing, and he said, you guys, every time I hear classical people talk, they go immediately to the what. Like, let me tell you about the trivium. Let me tell you about why Latin's so great. Let me climb Parnassus with you. You know, they want to pull out all the... And he's saying, you guys are all into the what. Tell me the why. Would you just tell me the why is this so important, what you're doing? Convince me of the why. Then ultimately, a child that finishes this school will flourish and become in a position to make a kingdom impact unlike any other resource that you could put before a child. Like, get me excited about the why. And I thought, that's probably a fair criticism. Are we so hung up on the what, we're not really dealing with the why? And the why looks more like story than it does facts. This idea of shaping the paideia, Ephesians 6, we're raising up a child in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. David Goodwin and I talk a lot about, you know, as our schools kind of have kind of moved, as a classical Christian school movement has kind of continued to evolve, we've gone from being schools that are very kind of trivium focused, nothing wrong with that, to kind of maybe we talk for, you know, everybody talk for another season about great books and why that's important. I think we're finally starting to kind of come to this idea that those are all part of it. But this kind of generational tree idea, it's about shaping paideia. It's about shaping the affections, the passions, the desires, the deep things. And that's so story-rich inherently. One example I came across, Seattle Classical Christian School. Anybody from the Seattle School? Classical Christian School? This is about a 7-minute video. I'm just going to show you about a minute and a half of it. But what struck me about the video was that in the first couple of minutes, they're just following the lives of several parents, capturing their story, but they're also looking to other schools to kind of help tell their story while they're young. Let me just show this to you, and then I'll...
Studying this verse, Ephesians 6:4, that word that's translated nurture, that word is the paideia. And there was an author by the name of Douglas Wilson who wrote a book entitled The Paideia of God. Over 32 years ago, he started a school in Moscow, Idaho. So when it came time for us to learn more about classical Christian education, We reached out through a connection to Doug, and he invited us to come and see that there's a school there that has been thriving.
So they've grown tremendously, and they now have pre-K through 12th grade. They've graduated many years of students and seen what they've gone on to do.
There's a feeling in the school there that as we visited, that was phenomenal. And so we walked through the halls, and he showed us a high school science class. And we got to see a second grade classroom, and we got to see a first grade classroom, and we got to see the gymnasium where they do sports and they've won awards, and we got to see pictures of alumni on the walls. They're doing amazing things over there, and so to be able to see this with our own eyes, what the atmosphere and culture might look like if the Lord wills that Seattle Classical Christian School were to be a full pre-K through 12th grade institution. And it's fascinating, it's thrilling to me to think about how that can be applied to an urban context, how we might have children who are joyfully learning right in the middle of the city.
So it strikes me in that video is here's a guy, he's casting a vision. He's so small, they're just getting started, but they're going to another school to show this idea of changing a child at the deepest level of human formation. And telling that story over and over, not just to the new parents who are coming in, but to all of our parents. A couple of tools that I think have helped with this, not only tell the story of the new families, but just even re-upping the commitment of the existing families. This is a Discover book. David Goodwin's put this together like 5-6 years ago. I don't know how many, 70,000 plus copies are being used. We use them in Atlanta. It's just a great, winsome kind of magazine style way to tell the story. And even existing families going, oh, that's it. I didn't realize that. I mentioned too, I did a video, a Q talk, kind of like TED talks. Had 18 minutes on the stage to explain classical Christian education, and that has been used by quite a number of schools. If you go to qideas.org or just Google ancient teacher education, you can see that. But what are the tools? Again, I'm just sort of trying to stir us up. I want to move quickly here to kind of look at some of the practical things that we may be able to do. Just kind of make this point, though, before we do that, just what parents need to know about our schools, again, is that things are caught as much as they are taught. And I would just say, what is the experience of your school when you walk into it? And if you know, we become numb to our surroundings because we're always in those surroundings. Maybe, you know, we struggle with, I told David my first visit, so there's this beautiful building with all this wood trim and, you know, just spouting out this idea of truthfulness and beauty. And then there's the lost and found table right there when you walk in. I'm thinking, that just sort of doesn't work with everything that's in this. So, you know, what is your experience of the school to the parent as they go through something like carpool or they call the front office? Have you ever called your front office before and you got the voicemail? That is just so frustrating. And you may think that you've got everybody on board, but that parent is so frustrated with you right now. They're not sticky because they can't. Carpool is backing up and they can't seem to get anybody on the phone in the morning. In Atlanta, we had a habit of, we had staff that would open the carpool doors as kids are getting there. And we would say to the student, we'd train him, you look at me in the eye, and I'd say, good morning, Johnny. And he'd say, good morning, Mr. Ellis. I'd say, how are you doing? He'd say, I'm fine, thank you, how are you? And we'd have this exchange. And the parents, again, it's as much about training the parent as the child. And the parents saying, I love this school. Like, they actually are on it before my kid's even out of the car on the asphalt coming in the building. And you'll have different ways to do that. But what are you doing just to create an ethos that continually reinforces the parents that this is a place that is different, that's creating a change within the life of your student that you want to see happen. And then the point about frequency, corporate America says that we should repeat a vision every 30 days, and God says it's every 7 days. That's why we're supposed to kind of do the church thing every 7 days, because we can't remember beyond about that. And yet in this business here, we have parent orientation in August, and we do some fall preview thing in May, and we expect parents to stay with us through the whole time. So what are the frequency points that you can invest over and over for them to see this vision? Let me talk about kind of the idea of best practices, which I know what you came here for. Kind of the timely versus the timeless. And I think these are helpful categories. I know so often we've tried to blend them. So, for instance, your outcomes, your weekly school office notes or whatever you call them, or Monday memo or whatever it is, and you've got the headmaster's kind of lofty ideas on the vision and the value of all of this tucked in with all of the logistics on the field trip. And I would make sure that these things kind of live in separate camps. So, yes, have newsletters. Some of you have blogs. I've sent out, whenever I can, I try to put how long it is it's going to take to read. Like, this will take you 2 minutes. Because people, you know, we administrators love to chat for, you know, 5 pages of grand and glorious things that the busy parent is not about to read at that length. So make it manageable size.
there are tools out there that you can use for newsletters. Make it an interesting thing visually. We use MailChimp. There's constant contact, other things, versus just a static email. We ended up, one of the best things we did this last year is we hired a communication person for 10 hours a week, and her job is to make sure that anything that goes out of the school is beautiful and manageable in size and length. And again, I think we to break through the static noise of what parents are hearing, how do we communicate well, and what's the frequency of doing it, and what does it look like when it comes? Another timeless thing other than newsletters and blogs would be, we call them nightstand articles. So went through and found articles of about the length, 3 or 4 pages tops, bound them up, just simple style, give those out once a year. In Atlanta, we did an anthology, but just what are some reading materials, articles, just best practices that continue to bring alignment and understand the parents? This isn't just for the new parents, it's for everyone. And if you publish one of these every year, and call a nightstand article the idea, like just sit it by your bed. I know you're going to read this thing all at once, but just work your way through it. Again, it's an investment in an understanding. Those same articles, and many of them have become white papers. I know we've got a rack in our hallway which just here's various articles on various things, like why wear uniforms or why Latin or whatever these things may be. They're timeless questions. If you write on that 5 years later, that another set of parents are going to be asking the same questions. 2 years ago, David and I launched Ambrose something we call Base Camp, and the idea is before you ascend Mount Everest as a parent, you need to have Base Camp so you're gearing up along the way. And so we're still in the process of developing this, but Base Camp is going to ultimately be a six-part series covering everything from the vision of classical Christian education to, you know, what is the parent role in education and discipline, what does dating look like, how do you deal with technology, all these questions, and sort of bundle it up to the point that it can be captured in a video format. We have a place in our warehouse on the website where we can warehouse it. We're still developing this, but I still think, again, back to my earlier point with the newlyweds, if you can get parents ideally early on, or maybe as a prerequisite or part of that process, to come and sit through, maybe it's a 3-part series that repeats, and you pick whichever one you can come to in whatever order you want to, it just lays out that foundational piece. That sets it in motion, and things like a base camp parent education, I think, formalizes and gives an opportunity for parents to come and be educated. Those are kind of timeless things. The timely would be, again, back to just, you got to get out a weekly article, weekly information to the parents. Parents that are not communicated with get frustrated. They lose their stickiness because you didn't tell them about the field trip or the fact that it's a half day on Friday or whatever the detail may be. Make sure you're communicating well. And again, if it takes hiring a part-time communications person, I think it's money well spent. Don't frustrate you. You know, have contingencies for things. What do you do during those snow days or whatever it may be, and emergency announcements. There are tools like Parent Alert that send simultaneous text and emails and voice communication. I think, again, the more you communicate well, the more you show yourself to be investing in parents being sticky. And then ultimately, what are the timely things that are when the parents need it? If parents are, college is the last thing on the mind of a grammar school parent for the most part, although that's actually in Atlanta, that was the first thing, but anyhow. It depends on where you are, but generally speaking, where are they in that? What's their need? What are the needs or the things they're asking about? And so we did a college night this year. Lynn Gibson, who I think is doing a workshop, flew down from Spokane, did a great job. And I know one parent who said, you know, we were really kicking the tires of whether we were going to go somewhere else because that was so important for us. But you guys provided a very timely evening just to come in and hear about why it is that classical Christian schools actually are preparing better than anyone for college. And we are committed now. So delivering it at the point in which it's becoming an issue is very timely and very important. So much we can say about social media, and there's lots of questions. One of the most helpful things I've come across, this is a free PDF, Brendan Schneider, it's schneiderb.com. If you go to his website, and you'll find this free. He talks about kind of all the forms of social media, Facebook, Pinterest, whatever it is, and sort of ways in which he's using those tools and the life of school. The biggest thing I would say is whatever you choose to use, do a few things and do them well versus a lot of things. Now you've got, you know, we tweet once a year. Like, nobody's going to follow that. Or we, you know, we have a Facebook page that we update twice a year. Do it and do it well. And I think this tool is very helpful in explaining just what are some best practices with social media. I would say be creative. One of the things, again, it depends on who you've got and what the resources are. We have a mom who's a creative artist. We did an auction this year, and one of the things we thought, we've got a guy that was coming to speak that was involved in the Marvel comic industry, and that's a whole long story. But anyhow, we sent out this cartoon strip by way of inviting people to the auction. It's just a little fresh, a little bit different.
Short form video, I can't say enough about that. And I think, again, I'll make the comment that if we don't tend to think this way, but if you could hire someone, maybe it's whatever hours a week, as a producer, I think that's probably one of the best things that you could do. Imagine having somebody in your staff that their job is to figure out where the stories are in the school and come and interview you and you know, put it into a video format or whatever it may be. That's more and more the direction people are going. And you can take an iPad, and I did
several videos where literally I'm just editing it right there on my and sending it out. This is a great case in point. I don't know if you've seen this. This is at Durham, North Carolina. This like head of school and one of the team members this year, past year, on a whim. Anybody seen this? This is the snow announcement. What these guys, 5 million hits on YouTube right now, and this is just very quickly kind of put together to announce that school is closing for snow.
Feel that you have 5 million. I mean, come on. So, I mean, we laugh at this and we think, first of all, okay, that is so juvenile. We're classical Christian people. And then we think, okay, I would never embarrass myself, nor do I even have the talent. And you may not. But my point is that kind of thing, I mean, just the fact that it's been so viewed, it's an announcement about snow day at a school. How mundane is that? And yet there's such life in it because it was captured in this winsome way. So I think we've got to, if we're going to, we don't like it, it may not be our natural character, but then find a producer, find someone who can get out more short-form video. This year we had mobile bidding in our auction, which is the first time we ever tried that, and it worked well. But I did a three-minute short-form video. I literally sat my iPad on my file cabinet, and I videoed myself explaining how this tool worked, and we just threw it together and got it out there, and I had parents coming at the auction, and boy, that's so helpful, so glad you got that to me. And so thinking creatively, it's an investment in the parent. It makes them sticky. Let me keep moving quickly. This idea of carpe diem, kind of seize the opportunity in front of you. I like the idea of no opportunity left behind. If you have a gathering of any form, you ought to be sharing the story of the school, whatever that looks like. If you've got a chapel, we call them exordium, if you've got anything that you could possibly get, when you gather the people, there's an opportunity to tell a story to advance the mission of the school. One of the great things of having this 10-hour week communication director is that she's kind of been thinking of opportunities for press releases. So some of you are familiar with the situation of Pastor Saeed, who's imprisoned in Iran. And so we had a prayer vigil on the Capitol steps in downtown Boise. And we decided, you know what, for all the right reasons, let's take our kids down there. And our communication person said, let me just put a little press release together, put it out there. The newspapers picked it up. They thought this is really great. The school's going down. And so this was actually a photo that was in the local main newspaper there in Boise, just talking about our school coming down. And so now, what did that do? Well, yeah, it's great from just recruiting new families, but all of our existing families are going, I love the fact that our school takes prayer seriously. So I couldn't have done 10 lectures on this, the power of that influence of just one well-communicated act that we did. So always communicate wherever you have. Seize the day. Seize that opportunity. It makes huge deposits for the parents. Let me just really quickly, and I've just got a few minutes left, kind of best practices kind of beyond email, which tends to be how we like to communicate. Just bullet point through these things really quickly. One is the value of having a parent council, a group of parents that can kind of be a sounding board or the ability to be an advocate back into the parent base.
Chap Park, in his book Sticky Faith, says that what keeps kids in faith as they move into college is having what he calls the 1-to-5 ratio. That for every one child, I'd have 5 people who are mentoring and investing in him, because he's going to make decisions to stay with his faith based on his mentors, based on his peers. And I think parents are very similar to that. What keeps a parent in our school? They're going to go talk to the other parents. And are there people mentoring and pouring into them? So it's fascinating. The Providence School in Dallas, they're in about their 30th year, and they figured out that the younger millennial moms coming in are not as keen on reviewing homework and being involved in the lives of their kids as maybe they were 20-plus years ago. So they went and recruited a lot of the alumni mom who are now paired up to mentor these young moms coming in. And because of that 1-to-5 ratio and that influence, it's keeping those younger parents, it's maturing them, and it's keeping them kind of in the game. Couple things I do, I hand write a birthday card to every student in the upper school. And not with no intention other than just to bless the child, but you'd be amazed at what takes me about 15 seconds, because I got staff that pre-addressed them for me. The parents that come up to me and say, I can't believe you remember my child's birthday. And that's an investment. They're thinking about that investment that's been made. When I was in Atlanta, we're a little bit smaller school, and I was able to do in-home visits. And I told the parents, first time they got there, I said, hey, expect a call from me. I'm coming to your house. And over the course of a year, we had about 20 new families. I went to every single family's home, and I'd either bring coffee or they'd have it there. And I got there, and I was there for in and out in 45 minutes, but I got to know them, tell me about how you met, tell me about your child, what are your hopes for the school. You'd be amazed. That 45 minutes, it was like tenfold fruit. And 5 years later, when they're in my office upset about something, there was a relationship there of investment, and they were much more likely to be sticky. So I know that scaling that up, I don't even know how. I still think it needs to be, if at all possible, that kind of personal connection and investment is so critical. It depends, again, on the size of your school. And at Ambrose, we do something called the Boers Club, and where we got dads. Dads are really critical to get involved to make sticky schools. The Boers Club is basically guys that get together once a month, kind of talk about philosophy, things that are happening, current affairs. Similar dad connection, this year I started Father's Prayer and just put it out there and said, hey, dads, once a month, Fridays, I'm going to bring the Chick-fil-A chicken and biscuits. You show up, you're going to be out of here in 30 minutes. I'm going to honor your time. We're going to pray for this school. We've got 30 dads that faithfully show up every once a month. And what it's doing is not just praying, thank you, Lord, for that. It is making them sticky, because now they see the value of the school. They're investing in it. They got parents, some schools do father student camp out or dads and donuts. All of these things have multiple reasons beyond the immediate obvious when it's building in value propositions for the school. In Atlanta, we did something called face-to-face, similar idea with moms. It was built off of mom's prayer, but once a month they would bring a speaker in, and the moms would get together and they would talk about different life issues. But again, to the moms that are there, they're building cultural connectivity with each other, and they're going to want to stay through the difficulties. Another example, we did our golf tournament in Atlanta, we created fundraising foursomes. So each dad, we had a captain that was in charge of 3 other dads, and they had a financial number they were trying to get for the golf tournament, but they were also going out to eat lunch or connect up with those other dads. And again, it was building camaraderie and connection. Another point, we did something where we took the entire school. At that point, we had about 100 families, and we broke them into groups of 3. We had one kind of point person. We said, somewhere over this semester, I want you and those 2 other families to go out to dinner or just get together. And I would say about 80% of the families did that. And I still to this day remember conversations I had with these 2 other families that I had no other reason to get together with. But all of a sudden, I felt deeper connection to the school through those relationships. Host families can be done very, very well. I highly encourage that. Find committed veteran families that you've discipled and poured into that are willing to come alongside the new families starting in the summer before August begins. And they begin to build relationships, and they invite them over, and it helps them acclimate into the school. But then 5 years into it, they're the ones that are going to pick up the phone and call and say, what did you guys do about middle school? Did you stay through that? How did you deal with this issue? There's a deeper connection there. Take advantage of things like back-to-school nights in the fall or parent orientation or whatever you want to call it, where you're getting families on campus, ideally into the classrooms. We are at Ambrose twice a year. We actually have canceled schools, so we get parent-teacher conferences for the purposes of getting the teachers and the parents directly together. And I'd say about 80-90% of the parents turn out for that. And again, the value is, yes, they're coming to hear about their child, but they're walking through the hallways, and they're seeing the artwork, and they're connecting with other parents, and they're building depths of connection and commitment. Same thing with, we haven't done this yet. I know other schools that will do kind of alumni night where they invite the alumni to come back and they have their favorite teacher in there and they're kind of building goodwill among the alumni. Parent night, which is another opportunity. to have teachers in the classrooms, and maybe you pick a short story or a something simple to read, and you say, come and actually experience this education yourself. I've seen schools do that, and I think there's huge fruit in it, because you can talk to your blue in the face about classical education, or you can sit in a room and watch a piece of literature come alive, and you think, I never had that. I'm so thankful that this is what goes on every day at this school. So are we creating these sticky environments where folks are coming?
And then final point, raving fans. I laughed because there's a typo in the outline. It's called raging fans, although that's probably even better than a raving fan. The raging would be back to the loco parenthesis. But the raving fans is a term from Ken Blanchard's book, Raving Fans, in which he says, a customer who is so devoted to your products and services that they would not dream of taking their business elsewhere and will sing from the rooftops about just how good you are. That's the vision of a sticky parent. And so all of these things that we've talked about ultimately invest in a parent to the point at which they are so satisfied they would never dream of going anywhere else. And I would just kind of in closure mention, again, I could do 2 hours on this, so many things to say. Many of us have got house programs that we've started at our schools. House programs are amazing ways of investing in the students, because certainly by the time you hit high school, the students, maybe into a fault, are making the decision as to whether they stay. And if you've got programs like House Program where they are so connected up with their peers, or as a mom of a seventh grader said to me, I was so, it was a lot of trepidation, my child coming into the House Program or coming into the upper school, and yet you had juniors and seniors who are now, you know, pouring into my student, bringing them through, and that they now love school, they have someone to help them with their homework, et cetera, et cetera. Those investments through the students invest back into the parent, which makes them sticky in the long run. At the end of the day, you want an indispensable community. And I often think sometimes we'd be better off doing progressive dinners than lectures on classical Christian education, because you're building community and connection among your people, and there's deep value. And just a final story here in the last 30 seconds. Woodfield Academy in Atlanta, as they were growing, they had carpools that they would have parents come together, and they would take turns driving to the school. And they decided they would evolve that, and they hired professional buses to come in and move these kids in. They realized they lost connection among the parents. And so they went back and actually said, forget the buses. Parents, you're going to keep driving. That's why at Ambrose we saw parents drive field trips, because there's something about getting the parents on campus invested in the life of the school. So in conclusion, just keep this visual in mind. Is your value exceeding the cost? As long as that stays as a positive, you will see your parents remain sticky. Thank you very much.